There's an unconstitutional, unsanctioned, global superstate that runs these projects. It's not just US or UK. And it does not respond to constitutional authority, period. Secondly, the people who are in those positions in the US, UK, Five Eyes, other countries, if they know about this issue, it's because they were recruited earlier and moved up through the ranks. And they're still going to keep it secret from their colleagues at that level of government, whether it's a senator, a member of the House of Lords, a member of parliament, a cabinet member, person in XYZ president's administration. Doesn't matter. Left, right, center, doesn't matter. None of these sort of things that people think are tactical security are going to help you. I mean, this is one of the things I'm mentoring the U.S. government on right now, the part of the government trying to get into the UAP UFO issue. It's that the group that you're concerned about, these clandestine deep black operations, they have technologies that are reverse engineered from interstellar craft that are thousands of years ahead of you. So you're not going to be able to keep anything secret from that organization. Mm. And it is a corrupt organization. So you have to look at it as what it is. It's basically the world's largest criminal syndicate. Many of the men and women, mostly men, that I work with have had lethal force threatened at them or their families. I mean, we're talking about a nasty, thuggish, I use the word thugs, for this clandestine, illegal clandestine group. And so I don't, you know, I know the risks that I've taken. I've accepted them. These technologies have been around for over 100 years. And the reason they're not out is because there are very powerful forces that do not want it out. And if you're someone, if you have $100 million, which is a very small startup in Silicon Valley, and a technology like this, you will not get it out. If you had $100 billion, you're not going to. If you don't understand who you're up against and what you've got to do to get around those that blockade. Now, the answer to it is actually radical and simple. It's a global, what we call phase transition in physics, quantum physics, and in Close Encounters of the Fifth Kind, that documentary came out a couple of years ago. Yeah, we describe this phenomenon where as you get about 1% of the population aligning a coherence towards a big change, and this is in physics and superfluidity of helium, there at that 1% point, everything becomes very, very, very chaotic. And then suddenly, when it hits that 1%, of helium molecules aligning, it becomes super fluid, they call it. Very coherent, very peaceful, almost magical qualities. So I think on a macro social scale, that's sort of what human civilization is going through. Now, the risk is, you know, during that chaos, because humans have free will, we're not just a mechanical quantum physics system, and we have weapons that are very destructive, and the means to destroy the planet environmentally, there are a convergence of risk factors that have come together that are being very badly managed or not managed at all, because the people who are in charge, that we think are in charge, are unaware of the problems or the solutions. In reality, it's more like 120, 30, 40 years of advancements in electromagnetic sciences and post-quantum and trans-dimensional physics, as it's called, that have been suppressed, covered up, for obvious reasons. I mean, you've always had economic cartels on the planet, whether it was this empire or that empire. But now we're talking about a global interest in keeping the status quo of oil and gas and coal and nuclear power, and for that matter, solar and wind, which I think is a diversion away from the actual solutions, because as someone who owns the largest legal solar farm in the state of Virginia, which has 10 million people, I can tell you it will not run our house. It's the largest legally allowable solar farm. Let me repeat that. Without going to a commercial permit, which costs millions of dollars. So basically, the solutions that are actually going to fix the problem, those solutions exist, have existed, but there are very corrupt interests that do not want them out because And we're talking $1 quadrillion, $1,000 trillion or more in assets that are going to be replaced with things that would sit on your coffee table and run your house with no energy supply, because it's pulling energy from the quantum vacuum flux field or zero point energy field or whatever the name of the day is. But and I think actually many of these physicists are describing different aspects of the same energy field, to be honest with you. Some have called it the dark energy or the black energy field of the cosmos. I think in reality, when it all gets more quantified, we're going to find that they're describing various parts of the same elephant, but they're all holding different parts of it. But the fact of the matter is, from an empirical scientific point of view, people like Nikola Tesla, mm-hmm. not the fake Tesla, not the fake cars. I call that a Musk. That's an Elon Musk car. He doesn't have a Tesla. A Tesla, you would never have to plug in. Listen, it would have an electromagnetic generator in it and motor, a little battery, not 900 pounds of lithium ion poisonous batteries that explode and catch fire. A little battery. It would stay charged. The thing would run. You'd never have to recharge it. And I'm actually talking to a group of people who potentially have a technology that could do it. But most of them are already have made strategic decisions that are going to guarantee their failure. This is a discussion we can get into. Why do we keep making the same mistakes? So what happens is people who are, let's say they're a genius in physics and electromagnetic and engineering, or they've stumbled across a phenomenon. The problem is they also think they're a genius strategically and in terms of what you're up against. Because most people think, oh, Jesus, I built a better mousetrap. Now the world's going to beat a path to my door. And the truth is, Murder Incorporated is going to beat a path to your door. You step on the wrong landmine, you're dead. And the best case scenario is that your technology gets bought out and put on a black shelf. You know, BP recently bought about 10 years ago a battery that would have been a revolutionary battery and put it on a shelf. I know for a fact, I know the guy who was brokering the deal, Elon Musk wanted to acquire that technology. Poof. They outbid him by so many billions of dollars at that time, and it's on a shelf. Now, this has happened thousands and thousands of times. Not a conspiracy theory. It's how cartels work. It's how people acting in their own interests operate. So if you're running an organization, you don't want to see the price of a barrel of oil go from $100 a barrel or 80 down to $4 or $5 a barrel, which is all it'd be worth if all we needed for is plastics and synthetics. We don't need it for energy, right? So you're talking about an entire collapse of trillions of dollars, not only in infrastructure, public utilities, trillions, hundreds of trillions. Don't need them. Surface roads. Mm-hmm. We have anti-gravity developed, 50s. Those were perfected in 1954. So, but the people who invent these systems, they're looking at it only from, they have these blinders on, where they say, I've got something that's great. All I need to do is raise enough money and I can get it out to the public. No, you're not, because you don't understand your adversary. You don't understand who's going to be in there every step of the way. They're going to know what you're doing in real time. Encryption isn't going to help you. None of these sort of things that people think are tactical security are going to help you. I mean, this is one of the things I'm mentoring the U.S. government on right now. The part of the government trying to get into the UAP UFO issue is that the group that you're concerned about, these clandestine deep black operations, they have technologies that are reverse engineered from interstellar craft that are thousands of years ahead of you. So you're not going to be able to keep anything secret from that organization. Mm. And it is a corrupt organization. So you have to look at it as what it is. It's basically the world's largest criminal syndicate. But it involves, you know, hundreds of trillions of dollars. In the U.S. alone, we estimate $8.5 to $10 trillion have gone into those projects unsupervised by the Congress or the president. Identification and the transfer of whistleblowers from the assets I have to those people, not the people at AARO, the AARO, I'm talking the people who are actually behind and who manage the black budget, that are being denied access to these projects. That's what we're doing. They're the ones who would be your key people who would, say, be overseeing the black budget of the United States, the three-letter agencies. So just imagine this. And of course, people think that this cannot be true. A young doctor, myself, in his 30s, is invited to come up to Washington and brief the sitting director of the CIA, the Clinton administration, and then subsequently other people in the Congress and intelligence committee members. Whatever. This is all in the 90s. This is ancient history. And to my horror, I find out that those people were not read in. Read in is term for being briefed on something. And at that time, in my early days, I actually thought that if these folks could find out about the subject, they can make an inquiry, and because they're the top of the food chain constitutionally, legally, the president and his cabinet senior members who are have constitutional authority over the intelligence community or the Defense Department or what have you, would be told. No, they were lied to, told the bug off. And, you know, this goes on for years. You know about my briefing of Admiral Tom Wilson, who is the head of intelligence joint staff. After he retired, I disclosed to the public that this had happened. Everyone thought I had to be making it up. And then, of course, Dr. Davis's memo leaked after Edgar Mitchell passed away, because it was in Edgar Mitchell's archives. And I had invited Edgar Mitchell to the meeting as my guest so he could learn about the subject. He didn't know much about it, but Ed wanted to, astronaut Mitchell wanted to know, you know, what was going on. And he's a very, very smart guy, MIT and PhD and all this. Sixth man to walk on the moon. My uncle who helped design the lunar module, helped carry him there, right? So I go, no. So you were there. And then just like all the other senior people in the U.S. government and in your country that I brief, including your Ministry of Defense head, years ago, Admiral Lord Hill Norton, that I spent quite a bit of time with, all these people that everyone, if you just met on the street, you said they would know everything that is classified black, deep black, anything, because that's God is in his heaven and all is right with the world. Well, that's what I thought in my naivete in the early 90s. By 93, I was disabused of that fantasy and delusion. And then it's down the rabbit hole since then. So the reality is, people need to understand, is that there are two governments. There's an unconstitutional, unsanctioned, global superstate that runs these projects. It's not just U.S. or U.K. And it does not respond to constitutional authority, period. Secondly, the people who are in those positions in the U.S., U.K., Five Eyes, other countries, if they know about this issue, it's because they were recruited earlier and moved up through the ranks. And they're still going to keep it secret from their colleagues at that level of government, whether it's a senator, a member of the House of Lords, a member of parliament, a cabinet member, person in XYZ president's administration. Doesn't matter. Left, right, center, doesn't matter. So you have to understand the architecture of the secrecy. And then you have to understand what their assets are and what their agenda is. And if you don't understand this, so I get back to these inventors. If you're a bloke who's a brilliant engineer and a physicist working in a garage or a lab or wherever, Lawrence Livermore even, and you come across this phenomenon of how to create a very high voltage signal that taps this zero point energy field, and you get way more power out than in, which is what over unity means. You're more out than in. It's not violating the laws of thermodynamics, because what's not being calculated is that almost infinite energy field, quote unquote, Nikola Tesla's words, not mine, that you're tapping into. So there's no conflict with the laws of physics if you understand physics, but you have to understand the part of the calculation that's being left out of the equations, which Maxwell, you know, the Maxwell equations were changed to leave that out, by the way, in the late 1800s. So this goes back 120, 30, 40 years, where this has all been trying to be kept silent. Now, maybe in that era, it was the Gilded Age of Rockefellers and what have you. Now, it's their predecessors and the people who are in the, let's call it the catbird seat of the global macroeconomic system. So you have to really understand this is about global power and technology and science and finance. It's not about ETs. It's not about that. these technologies have been around for over 100 years. And the reason they're not out is because there are very powerful forces that do not want it out. And if you're someone, if you have $100 million, which is a very small startup in Silicon Valley, and a technology like this, you will not get it out. If you had $100 billion, you're not get, if you don't understand who you're up against and what you've got to do to get around those that blockade. Now, the answer to it is actually radical and simple. You don't try to patent and keep it secret. You disclose it, open source it like GitHub, the software company, immediately upon confirmation that you have something. Now, no one wants to do that because we're all thinking, oh, I got to keep it secret because I want to be the next Rockefeller of energy and make $1 trillion. I want to be the next Elon Musk. Big mistake, because you can't to get from where you are, even if you had $1 billion in a unicorn startup out of Silicon Valley, to where the world needs to get in the next 15, 20 years, or we're cooked. That strategy isn't going to work. So you have to rethink the entire strategic nexus, the entire strategic environment, and adjust your plans accordingly. Now, this is a very complex analysis. I'm not going to go into all of it. But if you don't do, though, if you don't account for that, I predict at the beginning that it's going to fail. I've been involved in every new energy startup for 30 years at one level or another, and have advised them. Stan Meyer, who had a water car, all these people, they all made the same predictable mistakes. They all kept their secret sauce secret. They took it to the grave. They were either killed or they died, or it was confiscated through a national security order, or it was bought by a big conglomerate and put on a black shelf. You know, now this is 100 and some years of doing the same thing over and over, expecting a different result. As Einstein said, that's the definition of insanity. So we need to stop being insane. But the problem is not that they're venal or stupid. It's that they don't know. So what we have to do, what I want to do with the Lost Century film, is to prove that these technologies have existed, but also explain why they have vanished and what, going forward, we need to do as a people together to change that. So that means that if you have a technology like this, my group could come in and be sure that, you know, anywhere from 500 million to 2 billion people will know about it within a month. How do we do that? Well, the media is going to blacklist this. They're not going to cover this. CBS, BBC, New York Times, Washington Post, Sunday Times, no way it's going to be covered. So you get Tom Cruise drive a car running on it. You get Demi Lovato's house running on it. You get Ariana Grande to have her home or her motorboat running on it. I'm not kidding. People say, what? I say, yes. So the people who follow and support what we're doing, okay, here's what we have. Now you need to put this out there to your followers. And they have 100 million, 200 million. Boom. You've just bypassed the blockade in the mainstream media. You've just blockaded the CIA. You have just, they would have to uncouple the internet. So there is a strategy and we have the means to do it. The problem is the people who have these technologies always think, oh, I can't let anyone know how it works because some other group will get ahead of me. To which I say, you should be so lucky, because we need probably several hundred companies bigger than Amazon or Apple to transform 8 billion people living like cavemen, burning stuff for energy, into a sustainable civilization in 20 years. And we barely have 20 years. I'd say it's more like 15. So if you're going to make that transition in the next generation, 20 years, you need to think that you're going to be the sole holder of that technology so that you can be some filthy, rich tycoon is not only a sociopathic, frankly, view, but it's not realistic. It isn't going to happen. Now, if you disclose it the way I just described to 1 billion, 2 billion people, open source it, where anyone who knows how to put a circuit together and build it can do it in their garage or their lab or their university. Tube that, you know, is squeezing a tube of toothpaste so hard, boom, it's out and you cannot put it back in. Now, time is your enemy on these technologies, my friend. Everyone I know who's gotten hit that sweet spot, figured it out, they dither, they get tied up in lame business you know, small bean, small ball business plans, a few million here, or 10 million there. Next thing you know, they're caught in the trap of all these pre-placed, you know, strategies that are out there being run by people who want to gather these things up. We're in possession of one brilliant man, the letter from the patent office, saying, no, this is a technology impacting the national security and we will not issue a patent and you cannot have it. We have that letter. It'll be in this movie. This is not a conspiracy theory. So the problem is, how do you get around that? Well, the worst thing you should do is listen to a conventional technologist, business person, a lawyer, or anyone else who would take a new version of an iPhone or a new version of a software program for Oracle or Microsoft and listen to anything they would tell you, because they have no idea what the strategic landscape is that you're stepping into. They don't know, and the inventors don't know. And that is the crux of the problem. It's a deficit of information about, because if this was so easy, to be honest with you, this would have happened in the 20s. Nikola Tesla had these things. Well, it didn't happen in the 20s. It's not happening in the 2020s if we keep following the same strategy. Now, luckily, with the internet, with a huge amount of celebrities interested in the UFO issue, the new energy issue, the environmental issue, there is a strategy now. There's a door that's opened in the last 5 to 10 years. It did not exist 10 years ago, where something like this could be disclosed massively and it would be known. But you cannot disclose one part of it. No one cares about a dog and pony show where you have something running on a desk. You know, the internet's filled with these videos. They're useless. Most of them are frauds anyway, frankly. I'm a big skeptic about 99% of them. But the ones that are real, you're not going to prove anything to a scientist or to the general public unless somebody else builds it, reproduces it, tests it. That's the sine qua non of science. The litmus test of science is that it's reproducible, right? So if it's not reproducible, who's going to believe you? You know, no one's going to believe me or you. They wouldn't believe Albert Einstein if he hadn't put his, and other people could replicate the effect or the theory or what have you. So you're going to have to get sane about how science moves forward, technology moves forward, and the bigger the claim, this is the one thing I agreed with Carl Sagan on, extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence. So you've got to put the evidence out there for other people who are physicists and engineers and scientists and academics to reproduce and prove. Otherwise, they're just going to think it's a myth and a fraud and a trick. And rightly so, if I'm honest with you, because you know, anything that claims that you're taking energy out of the vast infinite energy field of the zero point or quantum vacuum, but you wanted to keep how you're doing it secret, this is foolishness. Mm-hmm. Now, what I tell people, phase one would be this massive disclosure of it, open source it, no secrets, no holdbacks. Now, phase two, then that same group who understands the technology can then create specific items, because once it is established as a science and once it's established in the public as legitimate and there are very famous people running their house or car on it, then you can go to, okay, a normal business plan. So that's phase two. You see, what everyone's doing, they're putting the cart before the horse. Because they're leaving out this key strategic step. And that's what we're trying to educate the general public on, but also the inventor community, the scientific community, who's routinely stumble across this phenomenon. Because one of the things to remember, in the 1800s, the real heyday of electromagnetism and experimentation was between the mid-1800s and early 1900s. That's when all the big breakthroughs happened. Electricity, this, that, you know, telegraph, you know, telecommunications, the telephone, what have you. And people routinely stumbled across this effect. They didn't know what it was. It's quantified now. Professor Casimir approved, and it was accepted and published in physics journals in the 40s and 50s about the zero point. Now, what has not been proven is that you can access it on a reliable basis to run your house or car or your boat or whatever it is. if that's happened. But the people, I have a friend who's a venture capitalist. He says, there's a direct relationship to how important the invention is and how crazy the inventor gets. So when it's something that important, the inventors and then the money people around them just go bonkers. They just go completely off the rails. And they're thinking not with their head, this head, they're thinking with the head somewhere south. You know, with the animal spirits, it's called on Wall Street. So, you know, if you're really going to get this done, you're going to have to stay disciplined and intelligent. Now, on the government end of it, they don't know this exists. The members of the Senate and House and what have you, and the president. Their science people around them don't know it exists. There's not like there's some vast cover-up. Because if you don't know, you don't know. Frankly, until there are systems that can be widely disseminated, as I said, as a platform, as sort of a proof of principle that proves it, that anyone can reproduce and prove, the skepticism is frankly warranted. This is when I started the Disclosure Project in the 90s. It was called Project Starlight because it was a, not secret, but it was a confidential operation where I was trying to read in people in the administration and in your country and at the United Nations, hoping that I could go on with my life as a trauma doctor, an emergency doctor, not deal with this crap, excuse my language, and go have a normal life. But nobody wanted to do it, frankly. So so here we are in 2023, 30 years later. But I think that, and from my perch where I sit, is that you have people like when all this stuff came out about the Tic Tac and the UFO, you know, off the coast of San Diego. Of course, I immediately looked at it with my people. Oh, that's from the Lockheed Skunk Works. It's actually made at the Palmdale facility underground. I have an aerial shot of the underground entrance point. I have it. So I hired a man who had worked for Lockheed, not the Skunk Works, to work with me full time. And something quite worrisome happened. And that is the very people who had been tasked through the law passed in Congress to look into the UAP and UFO issue and issue a report every year on it. The top people who were in the most classified folks in that world had been taken out to facilities where they were shown a basically antique jet aircraft and were being gaslit, deceived. Now, luckily, these guys were smart enough to know they were being deceived. So here's the problem. If you and your colleagues and the people, the bosses you answer to in the constitutional government of the United States, you find out you're being absolutely gaslit and deceived. This cabal, this sociopathic criminal enterprise, way overplayed their hand with these guys. So after they were being misdirected by Elizondo and Chris Mellon and all these people for 3 or 4 years, finally these guys called me up and said, "We need to meet." So I go in with a presidential level briefing dossier, with the project code names and their location and where the facilities are and which are the contractors, which aerospace companies, which are the subcontractors, where is the gate, the northwest gate into the Nevada test range north of Nellis Air Force Base up above Area 51 and 52. And I just brought all this stuff into a secure facility and said, "Here, now how much of this do you want?" "We want everything." I said, "Well, you'll get everything." So now what we're doing right now, and we need people's help, is we are assembling that entire intelligence archive, but also actionable information going back from the 40s to right now, things going on right now. And it's being put into a massive hard drive system, which we are handing off, including the names of key whistleblowers, who the contractors are, where the offices are, where are the SCIFs and the underground, the deep underground military bases. So this is all being an excruciating, mind-numbing detail in the process of being handed off. I started that process in February. It's continuing and picking up speed now. That is how these guys have gotten on the inside. Now, they're not going to, you know, if you go knock on the door of some big corporate or a deep black program and say, pretty please, will you let us come in because we're TSA, top secret, special compartmented information, special access project cleared, blah, blah, blah. They're going to say, go away. They're not going to give you anything. They will not give you the time of day. Now, most people listening say that cannot be true in a civilized society where the rule of law is supposed to prevail. I said, but it is true. And that's the problem. So if you're the chairs of the Senate Armed Services or Senate Intelligence Committee or the equivalent in your country, in the UK, and you make an inquiry, or you're the president, they're going to tell you either nothing or they're going to tell you what they want you to know. So this is where an independent outside entity, such as our group, has to be a check and balance. The media is not being a check and balance right now and haven't been for decades. So that's why we need help. Now, the good news is that since we got this law signed in, this bill signed into law right before Christmas, that protects whistleblowers and people with non-disclosure agreements. Like this one man I'm working with currently signed an 80-year non-disclosure agreement. Of course, he was in his 50s when he signed it. But he had baseline access across 18 of these unacknowledged special access projects, dealing with UFOs, the technologies, the ET craft. So I'm ushering him in. So what everyone needs to do who's listening, if you are someone in America or even in another country who have been firsthand directed, involved with these, contact me at SiriusDisclosure.com, S-I-R-I-U-S Disclosure.com. It will be handled confidentially. You will be checked out. And if you're willing, you can be confidentially walked into where you need to go to give your testimony. But I already have 1,100 names of many of these people I've worked with. Now, some I met with in the 90s have probably passed away now. But we're going to transfer all that data to these, I call them the white hats in these covert and the classified world, who are, they're just the best guys. And they're victims. They're scared to death. They have been on the run since I opened these doors to them. They have been targeted. We've got put on the watch group list, which is the kill list. Doesn't deter me at all. I've been on threatened like that since 92 and 93. But I think that this progress is something like I haven't seen in 30 years. Not because of what you're reading in Politico or on CNN, but this other, what's really going on. So there's the dog and pony show you're going to hear about out through ERA. And then there's what's actually going on. And I know that John Warner the Fourth, who was Senator John Warner's son, and by the way, Paul Mellon's grandson, the guy who helped start the CIA and all this started, and he feels this way. You have a moral obligation to not play games with something like this. So you don't go and sit with senators and say, gee, maybe this is from China, or we don't know what this is. When you do know what it is, if you know what it is, all that kind of gaslighting and perseverating and dissembling and half-truths and mealy-mouth, we're 75 years into a cover-up that has cost the world its future and is now an existential threat to the human future. This is not the time for playing those games. So I know I can be very brusque. I'm an emergency doctor. And if you've got a bleed in your brain and you're going to die in 30 minutes, I'm not going to tell you got a migraine and go home and take 2 aspirin, so which would kill you, by the way, because it's a blood thinner. So you have to, you know, I just think this is not the time for those games. And so here's my conclusion. I don't know him personally. I do know that if you say things that are demonstrably not true, such as, we don't know what these are. We don't know where they come from. We don't know that the U.S. covert aerospace companies, and like my uncles, Northrop Grumman, have worked on and developed black money research projects that have man-made UFOs zipping around and have had since the 50s. All this is out there and has been dispositively proven by testimony, documents, everything that we put out in the Disclosure Project for 30 years. To then go up and have access to key members of the U.S. government and say things that are provably false, this is a problem. I don't care who you are. I don't have a beef with him as a person. I have a beef with anyone who does that, because if you have that kind of access and are from the Mellon family and have had those senior positions in government, meaning I have supported you with my tax dollars, since I've never gotten an Indian head nickel from the government and paid millions of dollars into the government for taxes, my view is you have a moral obligation to either be quiet or speak the truth, but don't do anything other than that. So that is my beef with, okay. And I think that we have to, you know, look, having been presidents and CIA directors, I really, you know, people who want to step in and then appear all over the world as if they are some kind of authority on this subject and put out one statement after another that isn't true. Now, for example, one of the key statements that got, now he's backed off some of this, but when he was with, there was a boy that I had sort of mentored back in the early 2000s named Tom DeLonge, who was a singer for Blink-182, and he'd stay at my house, and, you know, I got him very well. But, you know, when all that started happening, after Unacknowledged hit 750 million views, by the way, and they stand up this organization, and what happens is that they're putting all this stuff out to the public of, one, they're a threat to the national security, implying there's some alien threat. There is not. The threat, let me quote, I know people don't like facts. It's very politically incorrect to talk about facts in America. But here's a fact. We published, and you can look it up, the letter from the first director of the CIA to the New York Times in 1961. After Eisenhower said, beware the military-industrial complex, Admiral Roscoe Keelan Keeter wrote a letter saying, not only is the UFO issue real, but the secrecy around the UFOs is a threat to the national security. So yes, there's a huge national security threat going on, but it's not from someone from outer space. It's from a clandestine operation that is rogue and illegal, that is destroying the biosphere, has killed people to keep their secrets, and that is a threat to the national security and to world security. So people say, how do you know that? I said, because the first CIA director trying to come clean and cleanse his soul said so in an open letter to the New York Times 61 years ago, before you were born. So again, this isn't my opinion. This is a fact from a man who was there. Remember, the CIA was formed as a response to the Roswell event. And was the Air Force broke off from the Army Air Force. Those were all things that happened in the wake of what happened in the 40s with these ET craft. So the history of this is quite clear in my sense. And there are people who have warned us of the threat, but the threat isn't coming from Alpha Centauri or another galaxy. It's coming from inside, which is where the worst threats always come from. Good news, the senior people in the U.S. government now understand what I just told you. They know it, and it's been proven to them. They've been victims of it. And they're not going to be deluded by this anymore. If you have technologies that are 10 to the 6th to 10 to the 9th years, 100,000 to 100 million or more years that more advanced than what you and I are using right now, and you were malevolent, it's point set match. Part of the problem is all the science fiction and all the UFO, you know, subculture stuff, civilizations that would have that level of technology, if they were malevolent or had any bad intention towards this Earth and our species, it'd be over. And it'd be over in 3 nanoseconds. Because one of the problems is people, you know, we're talking about technologies that were extant in the late 1800s up through the mid 20th century, including anti-gravity. Now, when you start talking about space-time transferring through space-time beyond the speed of light, transdimensional physics, and you have that ability for entire spacecraft, people, space centers to go from point A to B, you have that as a reliable, reproducible technology for millennia. The state of human civilization would be like slicking off a flea. So I tell people, it's great to have those fantasies because everyone loves to have someone to hate, and humans love to be divided into warring camps. It's our original sin, in my opinion, is where racism, homophobia, all that stuff comes from. Someone wants to feel better than someone else. So you have to have, it is not politically correct to be blatantly a racist anymore. Well, in some quarters it may be, but it's okay to be an interstellar racist and say, oh, there's this species out here. I don't see any evidence for it, but even if there was, what are you going to do about it? And this is this was one of the conversations at the end with Admiral Wilson. He says, well, the best thing I know I have is a V-2 stealth bomber. And I have found out there's a secret group that have things that can do circles around it. And that there are interstellar, that's way beyond that. I said, yes, you're correct. Now, he was the head of intelligence for the Joint Chiefs of Staff. Now, a very similar conversation a few years later happened with the head of the Defense Intelligence Agency when I was briefing him. And in America, just so people know, the top of the intelligence, you have the CIA director, civilian, but the top of all military intelligence is the director of the Defense Intelligence Agency, DIA, not CIA. And so, it was a very long briefing at his conference room at the Pentagon. And he had run into the same thing. He had been denied access, and but he came to the same conclusion. I said, boy, these are so advanced. So, obviously, if they were a threat. I said, yeah, and the threat is the clandestine human operations, because they're the ones who can pull the trigger on false flag and other operations that will keep all of you deceived. And so it has come to pass. I think this is where, the security of the future security of the world is not only involving, obvious discussions of peace and weapons, but also the technologies that could save the biosphere, but also in world poverty. Because I think before the biosphere collapses, we're in probably bigger risk. Of the 3 billion people, The Economist, the British publication that I read, recently came out where the 3 billion people don't have any means to cook their food. So they're cutting down old growth rainforests or desert scrub to make charcoal or to cook. That's 3 billion of the 7.9 billion people. That's not a sustainable or just civilization. And if there's no justice, there's no peace. So all of that can't be fixed with a windmill or a solar panel. It can be fixed with these technologies, but it means the termination of the 150-year industrial revolution, antique technologies of coal and gas and oil and what have you, and nuclear power. With nuclear power, you don't get energy from the atom. You're actually just creating heat from fission and running a steam engine like a choo-choo train in the 1840s going to California. That's all of a nuclear power plant is. Except you have the added bonus, while there's no carbon, you have a million years worth of radioactive waste that causes cancer and kills life. So, and how do we warn a million years worth of deadly toxic material when our civilization is only a few thousand years old? We have these investigations going on in Congress. We have millions of people doing CE5 peaceful contact to show a nice face of humanity to the cosmos instead of just some warmongering twit. But the technologies are still in this box. And there are brilliant civilian, not covert programs, scientists who keep discovering this phenomenon. But they keep making the same mistakes. What we want to do is provide a sort of a guide pathway of okay, you come across some of these technologies, now what? And the now what, the answer to that needs to be informed from the 30 years of research and experience collectively our team has with why everyone has made these same reproducible errors.
You've brought it up a couple of times, so I'd like to kind of just quickly highlight it. Recently I flew to Florida and I met Oak Shannon, the former special projects manager for Los Alamos National Labs, and one of the names that was mentioned in the Admiral Wilson documents. Very kind person, both him and his wife Linda. And he told me on the record during an interview we did recently that Admiral Wilson, you know, did call him up to ask about Eric Davis. Oakshannon confirmed that he vouched for Eric Davis to Admiral Wilson. Everything about Oakshannon in those documents has since been confirmed by Oakshannon on our interview, and the documents themselves, as you know, have been inserted into the congressional record.
I would not expect you to be able to confirm the legitimacy of the transcript itself or whether the meeting actually took place, because the alleged meeting has nothing to do with you in a direct sense. However, your name is mentioned in these documents, and so for the sake of clarification, I think it's important that we just get your side of this on the record. So I would just like to be able to ask you, first of all, whether or not you personally know Dr. Eric W. Davis.
Yeah. I didn't work with him day in and day out, but I did work with him. I know him fairly well.
May I ask how you first got to know him?
In mutual projects, mm-hmm. mutual acquaintances, meetings, things of that sort.
And do you personally know Admiral Thomas R. Wilson?
Yes, I do. But I know him, and of course I know of him. But I read somewhere that his response was, "Oak who?" And I thought that was kind of funny. as I mentioned to you, I consider myself eminently forgettable. So I'm sure that my memory of him is stronger than his memory of me, because mm-hmm. he became a flag officer. I went off and did weird things on top of a mesa in New Mexico. So, so I would expect that he would not remember me as well as I remember him.
Did Admiral Wilson get in contact with you in 2001 or 2002, inquiring into the background and overall trustworthiness of Dr. Eric Davis?
Earlier than that.
Was it earlier than that? My apologies.
Yeah. No, it's we moved to Florida in 2000, and Linda's listening in the background, so she can yell at me and tell me if I'm wrong.
Hey, Linda.
2001. I had had a heart attack and had actually died on the ICU table, and had my own out of body experience, by the way.
Yes, I want to talk to you about that a little bit later on. Absolutely.
I was eventually forced to retire medically because I could not get back in the saddle, even remote work. And I was at home. I was having several complications out of that experience, out of that problem, kept recurring over the months. This was in like May of 99, honey?
Yes.
Yeah. May of 99. And throughout the summer, I was having these other problems being cropped up for that. And so I was at home. Actually, I was actually writing, trying to write a novel about the destruction of the Twin Towers. This was in 1999. I had to trash that when it actually happened.
Wow.
I got this phone call, and it was from Admiral Wilson. And he asked me, now this was not a short conversation. I was recuperating. Mm-hmm. I was able to carry on this conversation on the phone, but I wasn't able to do much else at that point. And we had a discussion, and one of the things he wanted to know was, could he trust Eric Davis? And I think he may have even mentioned Hal Putoff. And one or two other people. And I mentioned that, yes, I believe that Eric Davis was an honorable and conscientious scientist, and that he would honor any restrictions the Admiral might put on him. And I thought it would be safe for him to contact him.
Do you think we'll ever get anything from Admiral Wilson himself?
Look, I mean, he was threatened with demotion. And threatened otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So many of the men and women, mostly men, that I work with, about some in the last few months, have had lethal force threatened at them or their families. I mean, we're talking about a nasty, thuggish, I use the word thugs, for this clandestine, illegal clandestine group. And so I don't, you know, I know the risks that I've taken. I've accepted them. And luckily, I don't need money. I don't need fame. My children and my grandchildren and my wife are taken care of, and I've already taken care of all that. So they kill me, come at it. But, you know, God help you, because I've got a dead man trigger with stuff that no one in the world's ever seen that'll hit the internet immediately. That's in multiple places and multiple confidential people holding it. So that's my, you know, ace, because they know what I have. This cabal of sociopaths and murderers know what I have. But the other thing is that it's that's why I don't judge. You know, I think it, you know, at this stage, now, let me be clear. This is very early stages of any official government really looking into this. Because Project Blue Book was a dog and pony show. Right now, Arrow is a dog and pony show. It's sound and fury signifying nothing. Because the people in there have deliberately been kept in the dark, so they have plausible deniability. But the real action that's happening, where people are being walked in who have testimony, those people can do it. They can do it confidentially, and they need to contact me ASAP soon, because that's beginning this month, January, February, on through into the spring. The other thing that I say to people is that one of the things I'm advocating for, two things, actually. One is a part of a bill to be introduced this year to provide executive protection, martial protection, whatever, to people, physical protection. And that would be official and provided. And the other is amnesty for very senior people that I know who've been involved in these projects at the corporate level and in the government level, but who have liability under the treason, under, you know, for treason, but also financial liability. There's one executive that we've been, had reached out to us, who major executive, major company, hundreds of millions of dollars he made from these operations. And he's elderly. He doesn't want to lose that for his family. And I think, look, you know, I mean, it's a complicated problem I'm dealing with here. And so what I'm advising the people in the U.S. government is an eye for an eye leaves the whole world blind. We need to get some of these people at the very senior level to come forward. But if you do a scorched earth approach, we're just going to try you for treason, or we're going to seize your assets under RICO, racketeering influence, corrupt organization laws, then, you know, they could hit the button and blow the whole system.